So klingt Weihnachten bei Rewe. Jetzt festlich sparen bei deinem Weihnachtseinkauf. Diese Woche bei Rewe. Frische Netzsekt, verschiedene Sorten, je 0,75 Liter Flasche nur 3,49 Euro. Und außerdem Emira Klettscheiben, Natur, je 200 Gramm Packung nur 2,22 Euro. Sichere dir außerdem bis zum 24. Dezember 10% Rewe Bonusguthaben auf Weihnachtssüßwaren. Nur in deiner Rewe-App. Frohe Weihnachten. Festlich sparen bei Rewe. Dein Markt.
Welcome to another episode of Axe of the Blood God, US Gamer's official RPG podcast. I'm your host, Kat Bailey. With me, as always, my lovely co-host, Nadia Oxford.
Hello, everybody. How are you doing? I am good. It's my birthday. Hooray.
Happy birthday.
Thank you.
Congratulations. You're alive for another year.
I'm still breathing somehow.
Another year of wonderful RPGs and all of that good stuff.
Another year of blood for the Blood God.
Indeed. So this week, we're not going to be doing a first segment that much. We are going to be doing the top 25 RPG countdown and continuing onward. So we're going to look forward to that in the second segment. In the meantime, Nadia, you did finish your review of Octopath Traveler. It is scored. It is on the website. You gave it a 4 out of 5.
Yes, I did. It is finally done. It has a stamp on it. It is 4 to 5. That is 4 snow leopards out of 5.
Four snow leopards out of five.
Yes.
So that must mean that it's basically a 10 out of 5, because snow leopards are amazing.
Oh, you got a point there. Yeah, I guess I was going to say one snow leopard is worth 2 snow leopards. No, that makes no sense. This is why I failed math. No, I say, okay, 1 snow leopard is worth, 5 tigers.
Did your opinion on it change at all since we last recorded our episode?
Not very much. I would say the things I penalized the game for was I think it did a really good job balancing that retro and modern mechanics, except in a couple of instances. I do feel that boss battles tended to go on for a bit longer than they needed to, number one. Number two, there's the random encounters, which I don't think is terrible, and I'm glad you can kind of make them less frequent, but I still feel like you should have had the option to turn them off, but it's not a huge deal for me. Number three, and this one just baffles me, your inactive party members, they don't gain experience for some reason. And I can't, it's been a very long time since I played an RPG that did that to me.
Oh, really?
Yeah, like if your inactive party members, it kind of shows them hanging out at the tavern, which is kind of cute and funny. I like that. But they don't gain anything at all in the way of experience. That includes job experience points, which become very valuable later on in the game when you really need those support skills, for example, that restore your health every turn, restore your SP every turn. They can mean the difference between life and death. And if you don't have them and you're not earning that experience, you're not earning those job points, that does mean some grinding. And I just feel like that's a waste of time.
You ended up putting what, 60 hours into this game?
Yes.
Man,
yes.
That's a pretty meaty RPG.
It is definitely a meaty RPG, and there is... Like, I haven't done the post-game dungeon yet, which is, I'm told, that's where the party does come together. But what I argued in my review is that basically if you are looking for an RPG that does bring them all together, does have this overarching story, however you look at it, Octopath Traveler is not going to scratch that itch because you are spending 60 hours at least with these individual stories. So it's not as if you play, it's not like Dragon Quest IV, for example, where you play those individual stories for a quarter of the game, half the game, and then it all comes together at the end. It's not like that. You are spending most of your time, like the overwhelming majority of your time, with the 8 characters individually.
All right. Well, you should go check out Nadia's review over on the website, and she has some final thoughts there. In addition, over on the site, Mike wrote a fairly long breakdown of the World of Warcraft 8.0 pre-patch, which apparently, quote, not the experience we wanted to deliver. It had some serious connectivity problems for the World of Warcraft fans. Monster Hunter Generations Ultimate's getting Breath of the Wild weapons and armor. They keep doing these crazy crossovers. It's like, it's completely insane to go in there now because everybody's wearing armor and stuff from different games.
Yeah, speaking of that, here in Japan, they have a Snoopy crossover. Which is amazing.
I don't understand.
I've seen.
They really love Snoopy there, though.
Do they really? I guess, you know what? When I went to Japan, we drove by the Snoopy Museum, and I'm like, oh, damn, I kind of want to go in there and see what they got.
There you go. Stardew Valley multiplayer update finally has a PC release date, which is very exciting.
It is, although when I tried to play multiplayer, I couldn't find anyone to play with me.
Aww. What?
Yeah, there's still, like, a lot of great updates that have been going on in Stardew Valley, so it's still a fantastic single-player game, and there's a lot of really interesting, cool secrets that you can find, but... yeah, I guess if you want to arrange a playdate with your friend and I'll go fishing, that's possible now.
Todd Howard prefers not to remaster Morrowind and Fallout 1, which I guess I understand. Morrowind is kind of its own special beast, and Fallout he didn't make.
No, he did not. I guess a lot of people might have forgotten that by now, but no, he did not.
And before we move on, a rest in peace to Hiroshi Kajiyama, and also Kaori Fujita, who is known for her illustrations on Suikoden 5. Kajiyama was known for his illustrations in Shining Force and Golden Sun. They both passed away. So
That's really too bad.
Yes. So condolences to their families and everything. Their art was really nice.
It was.
The box art on Suikoden 5, say what you want about that game, it was really nice.
It was really nice, and Shining Force had a very distinct sort of anime style at a time when just you didn't really see much of that stuff going on back in games.
Indeed.
Like, they try to localize that out a lot of the time.
All right, we're going to move on to our top 25 discussion, and we'll be back for mailbags, so don't go away. Okay, it's time for the latest entry in our top 25 RPG countdown. This one is number 21, and let's hear a clip from it right now.
World of Warcraft, I need to play!
Our demo was set up right over by the...
Got to sign in. Character name. All right, I'm in!
Okay, strictly speaking, that wasn't a clip from World of Warcraft itself. It was actually from the South Park episode, Make Love, Not Warcraft, an all-time classic, of course. Did you guys ever see that episode?
Of course.
I have not, actually. I've never...
I think that's the best South Park episode. I don't think it tops any of them top it.
What's crazy is, I mean, only half of it is a South Park episode, because the other half is sort of... It's actually just... It's machinima from World of Warcraft.
The voice you're hearing, by the way, is Matthew Allen, who is one of the co-hosts on Vigigame Apocalypse, which is on the Laser Time Network, which I've been on from time to time. You should go check it out. Also, joining me is World of Warcraft correspondent and superfan on US Gamer, Mike Williams. Hi, Mike.
Hi. Oh, I get a new title, World of Warcraft correspondent. It feels like I'm in a war zone. This is cool.
Does that mean you get guaranteed BlizzCon tickets now, right?
They offer them. Like, we just don't go.
Well, maybe this year. We went to BlizzCon last year. We sent Matt.
Oh, yeah. We sent Matt. Yes, we did. We did go.
Yes, we did. And we'll probably go this year. But yes, World of Warcraft, which is... guys, I'm going to admit, I really struggled with this one on whether to put it on the list, because I think World of Warcraft is certainly a very important game, perhaps one of the most important games of all time. And as much as people, as polarizing as it can be, I don't think its quality is actually in question for the most part, but it's changed so much. And MMORPGs are so much their own animal. But ultimately, I finally kind of buckled and said, no, I think I'm going to put it on here, because it uses so much from RPGs. It has similar roots. And one of my key criteria for putting together this list is longevity. And I don't think anybody can question the longevity of World of Warcraft.
Oh, no. Nope.
What are we at almost 15 years now or something? I mean, it's what going on? It's 04, I believe, is when it launched.
Yes. 2004. Yep.
Yeah.
Yeah. The fact that it remains just, it's big. It's still big after X number of years. 5 years ago, people were going, oh, World of Warcraft's definitely on the decline. And yeah, it was on the decline. It dropped from like 10 million to like 5 million. That's still 5 million people who are playing on the regular.
Yeah, no, that's still a huge, huge number. And even though sort of the focus of sort of the game has changed, as you were saying, it's kind of interesting how it still stayed relevant. Because EverQuest is still, in fact, making expansions out there, but no one really thinks of EverQuest as the MMO anymore. And
it's also buggy as hell, and practically unplayable because Daybreak Games has no customer support and was apparently being run by a Russian who was sanctioned by the U.S. government or something.
Allegedly.
I can't really talk about bugs and relation to WoW because we did just have the 8.0 pre-patch that had a whole bunch of issues because Blizzard, to their credit, are trying to change things for the future health of the game. But bringing those changes to live breaks, game director Ian Hazakostas, sorry if I mispronounced that gentleman's name, said they're basically balancing against 8 years worth of content that I pointed out was made at different times. So anytime they make a systems change, like everything goes really bad. And that's what happened with this pre-patch. So, but they're fixing it. They're fixing it real quick.
Yeah. You know, we were talking about the history and the longevity of the game. I actually just realized I have to do a bit of disclosure. I have worked for two companies associated with Blizzard, never for Blizzard itself, though. So I used to work for Vivendi Games back in the day, who was the parent company of Blizzard, and then for Activision after the merger. And I will say, like, I got some bonus checks that probably had a great deal to do with the success of World of Warcraft, even though I personally never touched the game, never worked on it. So
we have a mole in our midst, folks.
I mean, I would be effusive with praise about this anyway, because, yeah, I for me, the big thing about this game is it was my first MMORPG, and I can remember just feeling it was so daunting to buy the box and to start reading the manual and see just I was overwhelmed with systems, but overwhelmed in that good way. Like, I can't wait to dive in and actually start this. Like, I think I bought it on a lunch break and I was like, I can't wait to get home and actually start playing this thing. But that's part of, I think, the longevity of the game is just the sheer number of systems and sheer number of things to do. And sort of related to that is it's the fact that the game has a little bit for everybody. It's if you're more of like the trader type who just likes to look at the economies of games. Like,
yeah, no, there's definitely something for everyone. They added, I believe, in Cataclysm, the pet system, which is essentially like a mini Pokemon game. And I was one of those. Way back when I was hard into WoW, one of those traders that was spoken of, that I would spend every day logging on to the auction house and putting up my wares and outbidding other people and, you know, trying to make money as much as possible before I had to stop.
Well, let's lend a little context to this discussion. So we were talking about EverQuest earlier, and it's true. EverQuest was considered kind of the example of MMORPGs. Before that, it was Ultima Online, which was a crushing, the purest of the pure when it came to MMORPGs. And then EverQuest came out, and it was just a bit more accessible, but still very crushing. And there were two people who were very important who enjoyed playing EverQuest. One of them was Rob Pardo, and the other one was Jeff Kaplan. And they took the ideas of EverQuest and joined with Tom Chilton and a number of others and ultimately made World of Warcraft. People will probably know that at this time, Blizzard was primarily a strategy game developer. They had made their fortune with the Warcraft strategy games. They had made StarCraft. And this was their first foray outside of that since the failed attempt to make the World of Warcraft Adventures Lord of the Clans game, which was an adventure game, which, by the way, I've seen is not very good.
No. Yeah, I mean, well, they only did sort of half that game anyway. I think they outsourced most of the art. And yeah, Lord of the Clans actually later just got adapted. A lot of the plot of Warcraft 3 is based on that adventure game. And then there was a novel that was written that was basically the Lord of the Clans novel. And I've read that, and it's quite good. And if you're a fan of the Thrall character, please do check that out.
Yeah, Warcraft 3 is actually probably my favorite Blizzard game and one of my favorite games of all time. And you could already see the shift toward MMORPG at that time, because initially, Warcraft 3 was going to be kind of an RPG. Like, they really downplayed the RTS elements in favor of RPG elements. And then when the fans revolted, they went more toward a strategy thing. But you still had things like you would create heroes, and heroes would lead small, much smaller armies of characters. There was an emphasis on grinding during a match. It had loot. And it established the framework for almost all of the lore of World of Warcraft. In Warcraft 2, you had the orcs and the humans, and they were fighting, and there was a dark portal, and eventually you destroyed Draenor. Whereas in Warcraft 3, you had stalwarts like Illidan and the Lich King.
Arthas, before he was a Lich King, right?
Arthas, you saw the origin story of Arthas, yeah. And you saw the undead and the destruction of Azeroth and the coming of the Burning Legion and the Blood Elves, and all of this stuff would become huge parts, and then the introduction of the Night Elves as well. Did you guys play Warcraft 3?
I did. I don't remember beating it, but I got pretty far into the campaign. And you're right, the hero characters were really this, I mean, that was straight RPG, but it's no surprise. I mean, we think of, you know, at the time Blizzard was RTS, they were also making Diablo games. And so a lot of those things you were doing with those characters kind of tied naturally into what they were already working on with Diablo at the time.
Yes, the MMORPG genre really does stem very naturally from Diablo, doesn't it? Because Diablo ultimately was a cooperative role-playing game in which you were going through dungeons and looting things, right? And getting loot. Loot was the object.
Yes, it's very much like that. So I tend to find that if you enjoy games like Diablo, that you will probably enjoy MMOs, although some people don't like the social aspect of it. Like, I don't like feeling like there are other people here with me. But I tend to be fine with it. It's fun. I enjoy that part. But yes, there's definitely a hard line connecting Diablo to sort of MMORPGs.
Yeah, I've always played WoW more on the solo vein. Like, I do enjoy reading quest texts and just going at my own pace. But there was a time when I was heavily into it. This must have been Wrath of the Lich King days, where I did join like a pretty active guild. And that was one of the things, is I'd never done that before, but I had, like, I was making friends in my guild, and I would log on and they'd be on at the same times, and you kind of recognize each other and just chat about life outside the game. And I think that's a big part of this game's success. The just the social aspects and the guilds and kind of the culture that has, I don't know, manifested outside of the game. We mentioned BlizzCon. I mean, BlizzCon is a literal manifestation of fan culture around Blizzard products, in particular World of Warcraft.
Yeah. And if Blizzard is good at one thing, it's iterating upon established concepts. Yes. So we already mentioned, yes, EverQuest. Sony Online Entertainment was the dominant force in MMORPGs at the time. The year before World of Warcraft, you got Star Wars Galaxies, an extremely dense and slightly insane MMORPG in which there were no Jedis. Becoming a Jedi was this incredible, insane, ridiculous quest. It put a lot of emphasis on building towns. Yeah. But mostly what it boiled down to was you're a bounty hunter jumping around shooting at rats.
Yeah,
and the Jedi was added post-match
much later.
Too,
it was, yeah, it was
and
much
later. The fans
later.
Hated it.
Yeah.
The fans who stuck with Star Wars Galaxies for no discernible reason really hate it.
Yeah, so Matt, this was your first MMO. This was actually not my first MMORPG. I actually started with EverQuest back in high school, and then I moved from EverQuest to Star Wars Galaxies, which I remember, and I understand why people enjoyed that kind of gameplay. It just wasn't for me. But WoW was the first one to sort of polish up some of the, like, it is very much a direct copy of EverQuest mechanics, polished up with some of the rough edges taken off. And I mean, that's what Blizzard does so well all the time. So it's not, like, particularly surprising, but it's amazing if you go back to that time, like, how much of it is just like, oh, this is EverQuest, but better.
Yeah, there was almost a little bit of a meta where, you know, World of Warcraft was taking and refining concepts from other games, and then eventually that became like the big juggernaut. So then everyone else had to take notes and start copying World of Warcraft, and then they would innovate, and then WoW would roll that into their game. And so it was like this arms race, if you will, of features and aspects of MMOs. That WoW, though, it's just so big, it's really hard for anyone to topple that. Everyone was just scrambling to get a piece of that.
World of Warcraft consequently became a sensation. It came out the same day, actually, as EverQuest 2 in November 2004, if you can believe that. And I remember when it came out, I was in college, and I remember that there was anticipation around it, but it was also kind of a little bit strange. I don't think anybody was really entirely sure what to expect from it. MMORPGs were definitely entrenched, that was for sure. And then World of Warcraft came out, and everybody started playing it. Everybody started playing it. I did not play it because I was poor and I could not afford a subscription fee. But World of Warcraft became, I think it's fair to say, a sensation, the biggest game of that decade. It had 12 million players at its peak. It had many pop culture references. It utterly and completely transformed Blizzard from, it just became a different company. It made everybody who ran that company extremely, extremely rich. And for one way, and everybody tried to copy its success and failed because you can't make another WoW. EA learned that much when they tried to do Star Wars The Old Republic. They did everything right, but they couldn't capture that old WoW feeling.
Yeah.
WoW nailed it.
I think if you're going to succeed in the MMORPG space, and I've worked on a few MMORPGs, you do have to find your thing, and you can't go after the big dog, right? You can't just say, oh, we're going to take down World of Warcraft. You just have to find the thing that your game is going to differentiate itself on, you know? So games like Terra are going to focus on the combat, you know, and they're going to say, hey, this is going to be almost like this real-time combat. And so I think that's the way, at this point, if you're going to launch an MMORPG, or in that vein, like, because what does MMORPG even mean at this point? There's so many different types and varieties. But if you're going to do something like that, like the big open world, you know, with all these systems, at this point, you probably do need to have some sort of differentiator that's going to help you out.
Yeah, and in these days, MMORPGs, I mean, a lot of people, when Destiny first hit, I was saying, oh, hey, this is an MMORPG for people that don't play MMORPGs. I was like, I'm glad to see Destiny because I want people to sort of take that gateway drug possibly back. Which didn't particularly happen, but you know, there's things like Destiny, there's The Division, which are, Destiny has moved on to Destiny 2, and we have The Division 2 coming up. But those are essentially MMORPGs, just no subscription fee or anything.
Yeah, welcome to 2004, Bungie. And oh, look, you're making the same mistakes as WoW. Fascinating.
Well, wasn't it at one point, the apocryphal story was they had developers from Blizzard come see the Bungie folks because of the Diablo 3 launch and the kind of how they had to hit the reset button with that whole auction house and everything like that. So yeah, literally they were taking notes from each other with those studios because they're both kind of owned under that Activision Blizzard umbrella.
So you already mentioned, Matt, kind of when you got into it. Did you start with vanilla?
I indeed did start with vanilla. I think you said you were in college. I was working, I would say, my first full-time career job. I was working in a movie studio at Fox at the time. And then that sort of became my second job. And I immediately lost my social life. Yeah, because I was just, it started eating up all of my time. But yeah, I was playing vanilla WoW.
What about you, Mike?
I didn't for a long time, but then I'd say 2 or 3 years ago, I wrote a big WoW retrospective and I found my original box. And yes, I apparently purchased the game on launch day and started playing that night. My account is a vanilla account. That was in college for me, like the end of college. But I have been playing since vanilla, but my hard getting into the game was probably the next expansion, Burning Crusade, through to Wrath of the Lich King. That's when I did the thing Matt was talking about. I joined a guild. I was a progression raider. I was a tank. Like, that's when I was doing that.
I do remember the vanilla days, like the Barons, and you know all about Barons chat. And you might even know a little bit about open world PvP in places like the Barons, you know, between Ratchet and Crossroads, even though I think the bigger one was it?
South Shore. Terran Mail and South Shore.
Yeah.
Yeah, I ended up, and I just wrote about this recently, I joined a PvP server because my friends were on a PvP server. I don't like PvP. I really don't like PvP. But mm-hmm. I was stuck on a PvP server, so I had to live this life of trying to get my quest done and then seeing, like, especially if you had a quest in Terran Mill, the Alliance would come swarming in, and that entire quest hub would be dead for, like, mm-hmm. it's just a war zone for, like, maybe a good 2-3 hours. If not more than that. And
and it wasn't just that you would risk getting killed. They could kill off NPCs, which you would then have to wait for a reset timer to actually, like, turn in your quests. So you had to hide out until, like, kind of there was, like, an ebb and flow of the battle and then quickly try to run over during the respawn and turn in your quest. Otherwise, you were just stuck.
Yep. And that still persists. Well, up until the most recent patch, that still persisted because I was leveling up a character probably a month ago. And it's even worse because, of course, they had flying mounts. So they're these high-level players who are like, you know, three expansions past, who can just sort of swoop down on towns, kill the NPCs, kill you, and then swoop away. And there's really no way to get away because they can fly faster than you can move on a mount. So, so you were just kind of like, oh, that's it. I guess I'm switching to another character for like the next hour or so or something like that.
I mean, you mentioned mounts. That's another, if you were a vanilla WoW veteran, you remember how long it took you to level 40 before you earned your first mount in the game. Now it's like, they give you a mount just to play the game.
Not just earning the ability to mount. You had to pay for it. And back then, the gold cost of a mount was prohibitively expensive. It was difficult to get your first mount.
Didn't you have to craft things as well? It was very time-consuming.
Depending on your class. I was Paladin, so I think I had to... I forget what the quest was for the first mount.
And having a flying mount was a big prestige thing.
The flying mount thing came with, not Cataclysm, with Burning Crusade. And I remember, getting a flying mount with, after... So basically, the introduction of flying mounts made regular mounts not as exclusive. And they were the big prestige thing. And I think you had to be level 60 to get one at that point. It was like the last zone of Burning Crusade is, I believe, where you got awarded your flying mount.
Yeah, but it was much easier than trying to get a mount in vanilla. It was just like, you get there, you, as long as you got the money to pay for it, you can pay for it. And at that time, I was heavy in the Oxen House, so like flying wasn't as hard. And that sort of persisted through Wrath of the Lich King. They gave you cold weather flying towards the end of the expansion leveling curve. And then since then, what they've decided is to do the you have to do X amount of things, X amount of achievements. They call it the Pathfinder. And you need to do that in order to unlock flying. So actually what I'm doing is I never unlocked Warlords of Draenor flying. So I've been playing now to unlock that for my alts, because it's like it's an account-wide achievement.
You'll see old-school hardcore fans often saying that Burning Crusade is maybe the peak of World of Warcraft, but I think the mainstream is probably going to say that Wrath of the Lich King perhaps is where it really topped out, where it was at its most balanced, and its and where it really kind of found that mix, that balance between kind of MMORPG like accessibility but also challenge. I remember a lot of people complaining because in Burning Crusade it had these extremely high level instances and very few people, like 2% of the population or something, actually managed to beat Illidan at the end of the game. And Blizzard was like, screw that, we're gonna make all of this content, you better freaking be able to see it. And so they made it possible for everybody to take down Arthas, essentially, and all of the hardcore fans were rabble. But for the most part, a lot of people seem to just, when you ask what was the best of WoW, they said, well, Wrath of the Lich King was the best, and then Cataclysm ruined it. What did you guys think?
I loved Cataclysm because it completely kind of hit the reset button and redefined the worlds I'd just kind of gotten bored with or grown used to. But I would agree that Wrath of the Lich King for me was sort of the highlight. I remember when they announced it, I believe I was at that BlizzCon, and they showed kind of the raid where you're like riding these things on the way to meet with him. And it was just like everything was so huge and epic in scale. And I believe that was the expansion that really introduced more cinematic elements to the game. Because up until that point,
the Death Knight introduction was extremely cinematic.
Yeah. Everything else
was. Everybody was like, wow, that's amazing. And then you finish it and you go, oh, it's like back to vanilla. Wow. Okay. Time to level up my Death Knight. Yeah,
that was the Wrathgate cinematic there, which was the big moment for a lot of people.
In your imagination, it was, I'm going to walk up to an NPC and read some quest text and then kind of make it up from there. But now they finally were introducing cutscenes. But I think that also plays into over time, I mean, you mentioned the accessibility thing. That's one of the things, Kat, that they've done a great job of is realizing, well, okay, there are the hardcores that are going to see this content. How can we let everyone see it? So even like solo people who are never going to raid, that won't even do the easy raids, they will show you like the Lich King in a cutscene to be like, okay, you've seen him. As long as you're playing and going through the quest, you're going to sort of see most of what the game has to offer. They will like take you through like previous raid zones as part of quest lines after certain expansions. So in many ways, stuff that Destiny also kind of copied and does as well.
Yeah, I'd say for me, I was hardest in Burning Crusade and Wrath of the Lich King, but I personally believe that the game gets better with time. As they add more accessible features, flex raiding, looking for raid, scenarios, Mythic Plus dungeons, more content like that, I find the game gets better. I was one of the few people when they announced World of Warcraft Classic, I just sort of, like, I remember vanilla. And vanilla was fun for what it was at the time, but I have no desire to go back to that experience.
No.
So.
Well, we're at the point where it's nostalgic now. It's old school. Only the hardcore play vanilla, yeah. Which is funny because I remember when vanilla came out, all of the hardcore MMO fans being like, this is for babies.
Like, I remember having to go in front of a five-man dungeon and go to a meeting stone just to summon people. Mm-hmm. I remember have to say, like, in the chat, like, hey, does anyone want to run this instead of just being able to queue up for a dungeon? I remember trying to run Karazhan each week on a PvP server. So Karazhan was one of the dungeons, and on a PvP server, basically that area in front of the dungeon portal became a war zone. Like if you would get there and there was an opposite faction group about to run it, you couldn't go in until you either fought them off or they went in on their own. And
yeah. Well, because they did a brilliant thing with the Horde versus Alliance. You couldn't talk to each other. If someone talked to you in like kind of general chat, it would have a cloud above their head. It would just look like a series of random characters. So like you literally can't talk to the other factions back. Can you now? I don't know.
No, you can't. Even the new community feature that they just introduced is not cross faction. So they're still holding on to that hard, like, hey, you can't deal with the other faction for the most part.
I think the faction thing has kind of gone in and out all about factions. It's kind of relaunching that rivalry, if you will, right?
Yes. Battle for Azeroth is refocusing on the Horde versus Alliance faction. It does look like we will, in the later part of the expansion, deal with another common evil in the form of the old gods. But for the first, probably, part of this expansion, it looks like it's back to Horde and Alliance, back to that war going on. And in fact, both the content for Battle for Azeroth is split between them. So the Horde has one continent, one island, and the Alliance has another. And all their questing is done on those specific islands.
Hmm.
So
we're out of villains. We killed them all. We killed Deathwing. We killed Artis. We beat Illidan, kind of. He was in the last one. Did we finally finish him off in Legion?
So Illidan actually turned good.
He's good again.
Over there, yeah. Illidan is gone. He sacrificed himself to be the warden of the Burning Legion leaders. Okay. Like, basically, you finish the raid, and Illidan's like, yeah, good job. I'm going to go in there with them. I don't really have much to do out here other than fight demons, so I'm just going to stay there and make sure they don't get out.
Yeah, I mean, if you know any of the lore, I don't want to get too in the weeds, but from memory serves me, because I did read a lot of the novels at one point. Like, the basic lore is Sargeras, who is like the head of the Burning.
Oh boy, here we go. It's Sargeras. Hello.
Okay, sorry. Yes, he was the head of... Well, when you read these things, you never know exactly, but...
I know.
He was the head of the Burning Legion of these demons, but basically he was sort of like this protector titan god back in the day that just got really fed up with existence, and there was so much bad that he just got it twisted in his head that I need to completely wipe out all of existence. And so that was his
goal. Real emo.
Yeah. Yeah, he was the ultimate edgelord, basically. And so a lot of a lot of this stuff that's basically has happened in, over the course of the games has been him coming back or him corrupting Medivh. Did I get that one right, Kat?
You did.
You did.
Good job.
You did. Good job.
But yeah, so a lot, you're right though, Kat. A lot of the enemies are dead, but they always find a way to bring them back because they're like, well, technically he's a god, so he can come back sort of whenever.
Yeah, so the end of Legion, quote unquote, ends with Sargeras throwing his sword into Azeroth itself, and it's actually in Silithus now. You can go there. There is literally a giant, like, super tall sword in the ground. It's a physical thing. You can fly around it. So that is sort of the impetus for the beginning of this next expansion. Sargeras threw his sword, then got sucked into his jail. Illidan stayed with him. And now where the sword hit, Azeroth itself is bleeding. And that's the beginning of the next thing. And it looks like our next big bad, quote unquote, will be the old gods, which are the last sort of existing thing that came from previous lore.
One moment. I'm just registering the URL. Azeroth is bleeding from my cool emo band name. One second. I'm just going to get that one. All right. I got it.
World of Warcraft has changed just ridiculously since it first came out 14 years ago. Essentially, we've had multiple sequels in one. They've given it a facelift. They fundamentally changed the mechanics. And everybody has kind of that moment where they came out, they got out. But also a lot of people have stayed in over the years. And I mean, it's changed from doing like playing through the content and then getting to this epic raid, end game raid where you're playing with these 40 person raids, to putting a much greater emphasis, I want to say, on repeatable content, being able to do pretty much everything. It's almost like Diablo these days in a lot of respects. It's closer than ever to Diablo, I want to say.
Yeah, just to commend Blizzard even more, if you just consider how much gaming tastes have changed in the past 15 years and kind of typical game design and things like difficulty and trends, WoW has managed to keep up with all of that the entire time. And that is no small feat.
Yeah. No.
Meanwhile, it's been getting more and more ridiculous. It has an Indiana Jones character.
Yes. Harrison Jones.
It got silly.
It always sort of was silly.
Much,
but that's always so, part of Blizzard's charm is they're never afraid to be self-referential and to have, you know, humor and memes and things in the game, even since the earliest days of World of Warcraft.
Yeah, they have. And you were talking about the raids of Shrunk Cat. That's one of the like accessible things. I don't have a raiding guild anymore. But they added looking for raid and the flex rating system. So I can just queue up for the current raids and enjoy them. Like I was able, they do it so that it's like a tier back. So current hardcore raiders can raid the latest thing. But when the next raid comes out, that raid goes into looking for raid so everyone else can enjoy it. And that's sort of the spot that they found to keep hardcore raiders happy, but also let everyone else enjoy it. So it's a good system because I don't feel the need to be like on the bleeding edge of progression, but I'd still like to see things. So I've been able to, you know, enjoy the Nighthold and Antorus. I was finally able to start enjoying that with the stuff that's coming up now. So accessible. It's nice.
So as usual, we do our favorite moments of a particular RPG, the best moments. And usually we focus in on the story. But when we were going through the putting together the notes for this segment, Matthew was going, he was picking a lot of moments that were from outside of the game. I mean, one of the first ones you put on there was the Corrupted Blood Plague incident of 2005. Do you want to remember that with us?
Yeah, so I mean, that's technically sort of inside the game, but it was an unintentional inside the game. And so
I mean, it's a top five moment in gaming history, period,
yeah,
right?
It is basically it was a pandemic throughout World of Warcraft where it was a debuff that was supposed to be part of the raid, the Zul'Garub, or if I'm saying that right, raid, that somehow, due to a bug in the game, it enabled that debuff to go outside of that raid. And the way that debuff worked is it spread to other players near you. So within like probably a matter of hours, if days, but it may, maybe not hours or minutes, almost everyone on the certain servers was corrupted with this corrupted blood plague, and it would slowly tick down your health. And I recall like hearing about this and just being like, "Hey, don't go play WoW now because you will get this thing. You'll get this bug." Like it.
And no, once that happened, and on the first server it happened on, people were doing it on purpose. So for that like time, and that's another one of those things where when you're in it, it is horrible. Because you couldn't play, because you would just get hit by the plague if you were in town. Oh, you know, outside of that, when you're looking at it, it's like, oh, wow, this is like fascinating that the way how this works out.
Yeah, well, it was so big that I think Blizzard kind of realized like, wow, this got a lot of coverage. It later inspired an intentional zombie event in 2008 that was used to promote, I believe that was the Lich King expansion. It was basically like, yeah, they're coming back, or it might have been. No, that wasn't to promote Burning Crusade, was it?
No, that was Lich King. That was Lich King, and it was same deal, but it would turn you into one of the little ghoul things.
Yeah.
That you could hit other people with.
You also put Leroy Jenkins on this list, and then I discovered Leroy Jenkins, it was fake. It was all set up.
Yeah,
it wasn't real.
It's true, but it's still, and by the way, it's not real. We can't call it Leroy Jenkins. It's Leroy Jenkins, please.
That was actually pretty
good.
Wow,
that was accurate. Wow.
Yeah. I actually met Leroy Jenkins, by the way, at the debut of the World of Warcraft movie. He was hanging out with us. He was a guest of honor for Blizzard.
Wow, I can't believe you went to that debut. That's actually pretty cool.
Yeah, he was a very nice guy. That's his claim to fame. He hasn't made a dime from it, but he still enjoys
it. The reason I put it on here, though, is this was, even if you weren't playing World of Warcraft, everyone who played video games kind of knew about this meme or this video. And even, it probably went outside of gamer circles, like, it was a big deal. And what it was, I should kind of give context, is basically it was supposed to be this video showing guys at sort of like in-game content, and they were planning and plotting, okay, here's how we're going to take down the boss. And this guy just shouts Leroy Jenkins and runs in and pulls aggro on every mob in the room. And then the whole video is just everyone getting a total party wipe, just like scrambling, cussing, like, ah!
Yeah, so the background there is that this is progression raiding, and a lot of progression raiding is planning and execution. So a lot of times, and especially back in the day when this happened, like before you would start any encounter, you would have to have like I was a paladin, so I had to buff a whole bunch of the raid. You had to do your buffs. You had to get your health stones from the warlock. You had to get your water from your mages. And, you know, it was a lot of prep just to try any encounter. And the point with the Leroy Jenkins is they were still prepping and he wasn't paying attention and he just runs in, thus wiping the entire raid, which if you were a raider at the time was just like, oh no, like it's like tiny heart attack in your soul. But yes, It was hilarious at the same time. It was like one of those like, man, I wouldn't want to be those guys, but that is amazing.
Yeah. And to find out it was fake, yes, it was a little bit of a bummer, but then I just have to commend them. I'm like, well, you guys did a good job faking it because that was great.
And of course, we already mentioned Make Love Not Warcraft, which came out in 2006. I thought it was actually a lot later than that. So Warcraft was only 2 years old at that point, yep. Which they actually did essentially machinima. They had the characters inside it. I think they were doing a server and the story went something to the effect of somebody did actually manage to come in and start killing them.
Oh, God.
which was pretty incredible. But I think just the image of being harassed and targeted by this guy who'd somehow hacked into the game and created a super character. Yeah. And they're like, this guy's like an evil super genius. And just cutting to the dude wearing the tetanus cast, kind of clicking around, not saying anything. And when they finally take him out and he's just staring at the screen like, what?
And then did you see the BlizzCon where they had a guy, a lookalike, up on stage that was playing that character?
I did not see that, but that's pretty amazing. Looking at it in its totality, I think the thing that stands out to me is for the people who really loved, who have played World of Warcraft over the years. So when I told Ryan, I was like, oh, yeah, I'm putting World of Warcraft on the list. His eyes widened and he said, F that game. But at the same time, he's like, but I also understand why you're putting on that list. And I think that everybody, a lot of people who played World of Warcraft over the years would say that. But it's not from a place of hatred. It's a place of this game completely took over my life for a number of years. It was a huge part of my life. And I have so many friends now who were playing for more than a decade, who still get together with their old guild people, who still pop in from time to time, who we didn't even talk about the way that people feel connected to their classes. Like, being a class is almost like an identity. Mike was like, I am a tank, right? You're a paladin, right, Mike?
Yes, I have played. Paladin has been my main since Burning Crusade. I think I started in Vanilla with a Hunter, but since then, my main class has always been a paladin, a Blood Elf paladin.
I was going to ask you, is that because of the Horde paladin? Like, that was a huge controversy at the time that the Horde was getting the paladin class.
It was my favorite moment because I liked the Night Elves, but I wasn't a big fan of the Alliance at the time. I thought they were kind of boring. So when they gave the Blood Elves to the Horde and I could be a paladin, I was like, let's go. And I've been a paladin sort of ever since. And, you know, I've dabbled in other classes, but like Kat says, like, there's a definite part of me that notices when they change paladins. Paladin's what I care about. You know, I'll go on Reddit and in the forums and be like, what changes are coming to paladins? You know, in the latest expansion or the latest patch, usually nothing. Cause we're pretty like, we're not high or low on the list right now. So we're just sort of there like, not even a lot of changes for Battle of Azeroth.
What was your class, Matthew? I gotta know.
So when I started, I tried a druid, a night elf druid, because it was a versatile class that could change. You know, you could be a tank one moment, you could be a healer the next. They were kind of a jack of all trades, master of none. But when I was really into it, I was a DPS fire mage. Like, that was because I like soloing. And basically, even though, you know, survivability isn't that high when you're a mage because you're a clothy and you get hit a couple times and you're dead, you could kite and you could just deal so much damage that you could burn dudes down before they reached you. And I liked playing that role. It's sort of easy mode. You know, when you're in dungeons and stuff, it's like, okay, you just do damage. Like, I didn't have to worry about the tank role. All I really had to worry about was managing aggro and not doing too much damage at one time. And then kind of, so I'd lay off and then do more damage. So yeah, I had a really fun time with that one. I like to try a little bit of everything though. So, you know, I roll different alts and I play around, but that was what I spent the most time with was that mage.
And it truly was kind of a World of Warcraft. I mean, no, it wasn't EVE Online or whatever. A lot of people love to contrast EVE Online with, say, World of Warcraft. This very tight, curated experience, like an amusement park versus the total sandbox of EVE Online. But it was a world in the sense that you could do so many things. You could enjoy the game in so many different ways. You didn't have to be raiding. You could go do PvP. There was somebody who leveled up to max level somehow nonviolently.
Yeah.
And I guess they just went and collected things.
It was during the Mist of Pandaria expansion. So in the Pandarian race, you basically got to choose your faction, is I believe what happened after you went through the starter zone. But because you could get experience gathering herbs and other materials, they just kept doing that and taking a pleasant tour of their starter zone, which is like this beautiful zone with waterfalls and stuff, and just never made the choice. And they're kind of imprisoned on that starter zone. They can't leave because they would have to choose a side at that point.
Yes. So World of Warcraft, a lot of MMORPG fans might rebel, but I think it's the best MMORPG of all time. And I think it's stayed relevant in a way that a lot of MMORPGs simply haven't with the mainstream. It is the MMORPG. And I just got to feel like it's got to go on this list. So there it goes. You got any final thoughts, Mike?
No, I would agree. Like, I jump between two MMORPGs. It's my $15 a month is my sort of my MMO utility fee that I don't think about. And it jumps between World of Warcraft and Final Fantasy XIV. But I still really love World of Warcraft. I still pop in and play it on a regular basis. So it is definitely amazing at how much the game has evolved and stayed accessible while also, you know, offering something for pretty much everybody. So I like, hats off to Blizzard. I continue to enjoy the game, and even in the expansions that sort of dip out for me a little bit, like I sort of fell off in Mist of Pandaria, although in hindsight and in re-leveling, Mist of Pandaria is really good. But even in the times that I dip out, I still enjoy the game a great deal. So it's great.
All right. Make sure to check out the continuing list of the last few episodes. We've done Final Fantasy V, NetHack, Tactics Ogre, and Vampire the Masquerade, and now World of Warcraft. And we're going to continue on every week until we finish this dang list. It's going to happen someday. All right, Matthew, thanks for coming on the show. We're going to have you back again at a certain point. Quick, plug some stuff.
Sure. If you enjoyed listening to me on this, you might want to check out Vidjagame Apocalypse at vidjagameapocalypse.com, and that's spelled V-I-D-J-A. And I'm there with Michael Rapares and Chris Antista, and every week we get a guest, and we talk about a topic, and we break down a top five in that topic. So I don't know when this will be airing, but like, for example, the one that's just about that just aired this day, we talked about the top side characters from video games that eventually stole the spotlight and got their own game. So people like Zero from Mega Man. If you check us out, we can also be reached on Twitter at VG Apocalypse. Or if you like what you hear, go to patreon.com/lasertime.
Thank you so much for being on the show, and let's continue on to the mailbag. All right, I'm back, and the last week's episode got people feeling a little testy, Nadia.
Well, we're pretty good at riling people up sometimes.
So, Molarama, this is just a taste of the kind of the comments we were getting last week. So, Kat, if you're going to go all devil's advocate on the merits of a game, then it would help if you played as much of it as the people you're debating. I mean, I guess one could find the sprites not immediately aesthetically pleasing or whatever, but it still feels slightly weird when you're getting into arguments over its graphics, writing, and technology with people who've played more than 40 hours to your 3? If you don't want to pick up the full game, fine. But that's going to limit your ability to participate in a discussion about the full game. All right. Fair enough, I suppose.
Yeah, I think you got taken to school a little bit there, Kat.
Yeah, well, so it goes. But I did actually end up buying Octopath Traveler. I did spend my real human money on it. I guess people took me as being hostile toward Octopath Traveler. I think it was I was kind of trying to be like, oh, convince me to buy this game. Because these are my impressions after playing it for a little bit. And I guess what I should have been doing is full-throated enthusiasm. I apologize.
Best game of the year.
Yeah. People, like, look, know your audience. Like, people really love this game. It really obviously kind of speaks to them.
Yeah, they does have some distractors, though.
Mm-hmm. I mean, you gave it a 4 out of 5, and that's basically 0.
Oh, that's a 0. That is, you know, you all deserve to go home and live in poverty, and, you know, your families all deserve to starve.
Yeah, the reactions seem a little mixed, actually, in some respects.
In some respects. And this is something I addressed in my review as well. If you do not like the storytelling, the way the story is told, there's not much I can really recommend for you. If you say the stories are shallow, I think Schreier said that over at Kotaku, and I really, really disagree with him there. I don't think they're shallow. I think they're perfectly fine. But there are definitely some parts that are objective, and I can't really put a score on that, and some parts that are subjective. As a RPG, as a whole solid RPG experience, I think it's a really well-put-together game.
So last week I was talking a lot about, it's like, I wasn't a big fan of the sprites, and even after buying the game and playing it on my TV, actually, I kind of stand by that. And actually, I got some people, I'm going to cherry pick and choose the comments that agree with me on Twitter. Alistair B says, for me, it's the incongruity of the overblown depth of field effects with sprite scaling artifacts. It just looks odd, which, I think that is one thing. But I think I also said in the last episode that it's a striking look for the most part. I don't dislike the art. It's just the static sprites that has relatively little animation I wasn't a huge fan of it, to be perfectly honest, but clearly, at least in the comments, a lot of people disagreed with me. But maybe I'll like it better. I will say this, Nadia. So I, like I said, I was playing on my TV, and after I bought it, and I tweeted out that, man, the soundtrack in that game is real good.
It's very, very nice. Definitely worth listening to through headphones.
Super chill. And it's definitely the kind of game that it's like, oh, maybe I do want to play this on my TV. Okay, I wouldn't have necessarily said this. It feels like the kind of game I'd be playing on handheld. But unless I want to break out my headphones, I feel like I'm missing a crucial aspect. I feel like I have to listen to the soundtrack now.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. It's a. I actually think for last week, our starting screen for my segment where I do kind of look at a piece of game music every week, I chose Alfin's theme for this week because it's just a really nice calming piece. That's the way to describe a lot of the music. It's just very, it's calming. Except when you're in battle, then it's just like, oh man, I got to win or I'm going to die.
So last week's top 25 segment was Vampire the Masquerade. And I think these two comments kind of speak to how the audience feels one way or the other. On the one hand, we have Ardia A, who says, I am loving your 25 list. After hearing about Vampire the Masquerade, I really wanted to get a copy of the game. I would absolutely adore to play as a Tremere. Even more than that, I would love to get a copy of the Vampire tabletop game and flip through that bad boy. I was one of those guys dressed up in LARPing vampire politics at the student union. Sounds like we would be best friends. I wore a suit because I didn't want to break the masquerade, so no trench coat and katana. I like you.
Oh my god, that's amazing.
But then Arvis Jagermeyer says, 20 comments on this episode up to this point, only 2 mentions of vampire. That says it all, really.
Well, we did talk very heatedly about Octopath Traveler, which is a very new, very looked forward to RPG. So I can understand why people were just like running to their keyboard for that first and foremost.
Nuclear Vomit said, I didn't play the game, referring to Octopath Traveler, but from the screenshots I've seen, I get a Golden Sun pixel vibe, which is, well, maybe play the game.
Yeah, I think it definitely looks better in motion. Golden Sun, I appreciate it for what it was. It was like, you know, such a premier GBA RPG, but God, it is not pretty.
Fog Index says, as someone who primarily plays in console mode, I have to wonder if some of the details, particularly the small movements of monsters and party members when they are not acting in battle, are more difficult to discern in handheld mode. The small movements make them far less static than Final Fantasy VI's sprites. Additionally, Octopath's monster sprite detail is easily the equal or better of FF6, and that really comes out in later boss encounters and in the iterative version of the monsters that are not simply recolors, as Derek tries to gently point out.
I love Derek. Yeah, and he's absolutely right, too. I was actually fighting the other day versus, I don't know, it was a bunch of lizards, and I just really appreciated how much difference there was between the sprites. Like, you know, one species had a headdress, the other species had like a mace instead of a sword, and then like the Lizard King for some reason was wearing like some sort of gimp mask. I don't know what the hell was going on there, but at least there was effort made. So I appreciate that very much.
I didn't say there was no effort. I don't know. I thought that a lot of the detail was lost in looking at the actual sprites, which to me look very pixelated and indistinct, I want to say. And that includes when I'm playing on console mode. I stand by that assessment. When you're fighting the huge bosses, they put a lot of effort into the bosses. The bosses actually look pretty solid for the most part, even if they're still relatively static. I stand by that assessment as well. But the monsters themselves are fairly fuzzy and indistinct. And I don't know, maybe I'm going blind in my old age.
That would be a hell of a way to find out, wouldn't it be?
And to be honest, like, I don't know why I'm getting stuck on this, because I think it's a relatively minor point, ultimately. Like, it was an observation that I wanted to make about how the character sprites look versus the environments, which I think look phenomenal. I think the environments look really good. And people are right to point out that Octopath Traveler's Octopath Traveler does not have that kind of generic pixel sprite look. Retro look that we've come to expect from a lot of different games. So
yeah,
in that respect, like, I think it looks really good for the most part. So
yeah. And did you see Digital Foundry's breakdown of how the graphics work? It's pretty interesting.
It does sound pretty interesting.
Yeah, you should look. I actually wrote about it over the week, so look that up.
So, and Nilcom says, I often tell friends that Chrono Trigger is the end of the RPG genre for me. Oh, I'm so sorry. You've missed out on so many great games.
That's at least quit after PlayStation 1 or 2.
It's the last truly great traditional RPG, in my opinion. No other traditional RPG has even come close to it. That said, Octopath has really grabbed my interest. Well, there we go. All right. The smaller stories are super interesting, and the battle system is one of the best ever. It's my go-to game when I'm ready to chill. And Chaotic Beast says, I appreciate all the Octopath Traveler coverage on this site. I usually listen to these when I'm interested in the game being discussed, but I am just enjoying Octopath so much that I wanted to try to limit the information that I take in about as far as story spoilers go. I really love it, and it's hit me in a way that I can appreciate it so well. RPGs are so hit and miss for me when it actually comes to playing them and feeling really engaged. Persona 5 just bounced off me, for instance, after I really dug P3. I think it's fantastic that Square Enix is investing more resources into the Switch. RPGs like Octopath Traveler and indie games such as Rogues Likes are such a sweet spot for the system and gamers of my age, I think. I think it really helps that it's July and nobody else has anything to talk about.
I think that probably helps too. Although it's selling very well, especially in Japan. I think it already moved like something like 400,000.
Yeah, and the actual hardcover boxes that people are apparently buying are actually fairly hard to find at the moment.
Yeah, yeah. I think Katie said her partner had to drive like to hell and back to find one at Walmart or something.
I'm with Mike though. I don't buy hardcover games anymore. I only download them.
Yeah, I have to admit, I'm very much the same way. If I have an actual disc or an actual cartridge, just because my husband went out, because he's more of a collector in that regard.
You guys, what you won publishers. I'm not buying the used games anymore. I'm not doing the sellbacks.
I never did in the first place. I'm too lazy. It's like you schlep all the way down there. Like, I can give you $5 for this big ass pile of games. No, screw you. I'll keep them. I'll let them molder. That'll show you.
It's completely worthless. And they inevitably just sit on my shelf, taking up space, until finally I decide to get rid of a whole bunch of them. And then when I try to sell them, I get maybe $10. And the effort required to actually put them on eBay, it's annoying. But if you're like really into the game and you want the super special premium awesome edition, that can be a really nice collector's item if you're really into the game.
Yeah, yeah, they're actually doing that a lot with games these days. They're giving you the incentive to go out and buy the actual game itself. Like, we have Yakuza 6, we have, like, the full thing that came with the shot glasses and everything.
All right, that's all for the mailbag this week. We'll be back next week. And for now, Axe of the Blood God is a U.S. Gamer podcast. You can find us on iTunes, Stitcher, wherever podcasts are sold. Follow me on Twitter at @_catbot. Nadia at Nadia Oxford, please continue to yell at me on Twitter about my opinions on Octopath Traveler.
Please do. No rest.
I enjoy no rest for the wicked. If you're enjoying this podcast, please rate and review the podcast over on iTunes and all of those other places. We really enjoy reading the nice comments. It keeps us going week after week after week. If you have, as I mentioned in the last segment, keep an eye out on our Top 25 RPG Countdown, which continues. This week it was World of Warcraft, and who knows what'll be next week, but we're rolling right along, and we got some really good ones, and we got some really good guests coming up. Okay, so, pretty soon it'll be August. We're going to have a lot more games to talk about, and we'll have more RPGs to talk about. But until then, for Nani and myself, I've been Cat Bailey, and until next time, happy adventuring.